blessing and privilege to be here with you this morning. We appreciate the good singing and the prayer that's been offered up, and we certainly would ask that you pray the Lord would bless us for a little while to be able to preach from His Word, for without the Lord's help, we won't be able to do that, and we certainly want to leave here rejoicing, knowing that the Lord has been in this place, and that He sent a message directly to our heart. And if the Lord is in the matter, that will happen. But we certainly need your prayers for that to be the case. I'd like to call your attention to the book of Romans, chapter 13. Romans, chapter 13. I'd like to read a verse here. In Romans 13, and that verse is verse 11. Romans 13, verse 11, it says, "And that knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed." In this verse that we've read to you, and certainly we've jumped into the context here, and there's a lot that could be said about this 13th chapter of Romans. But in the verse that we've read to you, it's describing something that we'd like to consider this morning, and that's time. It says, "In that knowing the time." You know, time is a very interesting thing to consider. It's something that we won't have in heaven, but it's something that we have right now. In fact, I was always fascinated growing up with the text in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, when it said, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." And then growing up in the church, I'd hear people say things that happened before the world began, happened before the foundation of the world. And I got to thinking, that verse really isn't talking about the beginning then. Why does it say in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth if things happened before the beginning? Well, it is talking about the beginning. It's talking about the beginning of time. It's talking about the beginning of this creation. And certainly there are things that happen before the world began, but when it comes to our story here in this life, here in this world, that's the beginning. God created the heaven and the earth. And that's such a very interesting verse to me, because this universe is made up of three things: time, space, and matter. And that verse tells where they all started. In the beginning, there's the start of time. God created the heaven, there's space, and the earth, there's matter. And it's interesting to me, as you stop and think about God and who He is, He's three persons that is one. And all throughout His creation, we find three in one. In this one universe, there's time, space, and matter, three things. In time, there's a past, a present, and a future in one time. And space, there's three dimensions, length, width, height. And in matter, there's solids, liquids, and gases. And you could go on and on about the three primary colors, or just taking a seed and there's three elements that compose that one seed, or taking an atom, protons, electrons, and neutrons, three things that make up an atom. You can go on and on of all the three-in-ones that God has stamped as the artist signs their handiwork. God has stamped His creation all over that it came from Him. And what a wonderful thing to stop and consider about this great God whom we worship and serve. But in that beginning, at the start of time, ever since then, we have engaged in one day after the next. We have past, we have present, and we have future. And what's interesting to me about time is too many of us look at the past with great fondness, as if things were so much better back then. And yet we forget about the things that weren't so much better back then. You know, I have to admit, I've always enjoyed indoor plumbing my whole life, but it's my understanding a few years back, People didn't have that. Now, they had some things that are better, but I'm going to tell you, our indoor plumbing is better than what they had back then. I go on and on about that kind of stuff. But the point is, we think about the past with great fondness and forget about the things that weren't so right in the past. You know, when Israel and Moses led them out of Egypt and they went in the wilderness, they would sit there and they would say, "We're starving to death out here in this wilderness. But we remember back in Egypt, we sat by the flesh pots. There was melons and there was onions and garlic and all that stuff." And they thought about, "Oh, if we could just go back to Egypt." But what they forgot about was all the sorrow of the labor of their taskmasters and the slavery and the bondage that caused them to cry out to the Lord. They forgot about that. And that's the way we are. We think about the past with great fondness. And we think about the future in such gloominess. Oh, the future looks so bad. Oh, it doesn't look bright. Things look, not good in the future. And I want, and I hope to get into how we ought to look with great anticipation of the future. The future's a lot brighter than we make it out to be sometimes. Because the God who we serve has made a way into the future so that you and I, in fact, if you'll turn me to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, I want to point this out to you. Because the future is bright for the child of God. We sang that song this morning, "Victory in Jesus." The future is very bright for you and I. We might have difficult circumstances headed our way in the future, but it is bright for the child of God. And notice what it says here in the fourth chapter of 2 Corinthians, verse 16. He says, "For which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day." He just described a gloomy future. Your outward man is perishing. Your body is falling apart. You can go into getting more details in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, where he talks about the evil days and growing old and old age and how difficult it is. The outward man is perishing. He says, but the inward man is renewed day by day. Verse 17. "For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory." Verse 18. "While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal." Now, he tells us that we have an affliction. And in verse 17, he calls it a light affliction. Our light affliction. It's just for a moment. It's just for a little while. It's just something that's here and then it's gone. You know, I think we'd all be willing to put up with something as long as we knew it wasn't forever. And we can be rest assured that our affliction here in this life is just for a moment, it's just for a little while. But it works for us a far more exceeding eternal weight of glory. It makes us look forward to heaven. It's working for us. You know, if you have someone working for you, they're doing some work for you. He's saying your afflictions work for you. They're doing something for you. They're making you long for and look forward to heaven's pure world. And it causes you, as he says in verse 18, to not look at the things that you see, but the things which are not seen. The things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. It causes you to look ahead to these eternal unseen things and how wonderful they truly are. Our future is bright as God's people because of the great work that the Lord has done. And if you get down here to chapter 5, verse 1, he says, "For we know." You know, there's some things we know this morning, and this is one of them. We know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Now, this is what we know this morning. If our earthly house of this tabernacle, he's talking about our body. If our earthly house of this tabernacle be dissolved, it decays, it grows old, it passes away. This is what we know. We have a building of God, a house not made with hands, and it's eternal in the heavens. I remember one time, this verse always reminds me, one time I went and watched a movie in the theater. And that movie was about the Civil War, Gods and Generals, I think was the name of it. And we went, and Stonewall Jackson was in that movie, and his wife was upset, worried about him going off to battle. And he gets out his Bible and he reads her this verse, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 1. And I actually went to that movie with one of my roommates in college, and he said he was agnostic. That's what he believed. I tried to get him to come to church. He never would come with me. But he went to that movie, and I'm going to tell you, there was a lot of scripture quoted in that movie. And he left there saying, well, that wasn't just kind of Christian. That was just, that was pervasive. That was all over that movie. And I said, yeah, and I enjoyed it. But that scene where his wife was worried about him, worried about his well-being, he turns to the scriptures and he reads this verse that we know if something happens to us, if our body dies, we have a building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. That's what we know this morning. I'm going to tell you, your future is bright as God's people. No matter what happens in this life, this is what you have to look forward to in the next life. But I want to go a little further than that. Time is past, present, and future. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of things that happen and change over time. Things happen and things don't stay the same. But this is one thing we do have that does stay the same. Hebrews 13, verse 8, it says, Jesus Christ, the same, yesterday, and today, and forever. Oh, I tell you what, no matter what happens in the past, present, or future, you have this the same, Jesus Christ the same. He's the same in the past as He is in the future. He's the same right now that He always has been. Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. So we look fondly at the past and we look gloomily towards the future. That's just our tendency. And we don't do very well at using the present that we have. The present time that we have. This is what we have. We have the present time right now. How will we use it? Well, that's a good question, because life is full of different situations. In fact, if we get back to our text in Romans 13, he says, and that, Romans 13, 11, and that knowing the time. I wonder this morning if we know the time. Now, I'm sure you're all saying, well, we know it, Brother James. We just want to make sure you know it. I've got a big clock on the back. I know the time. I know what time it is. That's not what this text is referring to. It's not talking about looking at your watch, knowing the time. It means understanding the season, the time that you're in. And I'm going to tell you, I believe that we right now are in the best time that you could ever live. If you lived in the Old Testament, it would have paled in comparison to what you and I have right now. We say, well, I just wish I'd have lived in the time that Jesus lived. Well, I understand why you say that, but we're living in a better time right now than even that. You say, well, if we couldn't have that, maybe live when the apostles lived in the early days of the church. Even right now is better than that. We have God's Word recorded for us. We have all the mysteries explained and solved. We just simply need to read and study them. We can come to the Lord's church and even today have a better understanding than Old Testament saints like Job and Noah and Daniel and Moses. We have more understanding than all of them because God's given us His Word. We are living in a blessed time here in the Gospel New Testament church. Knowing the time is so important, because if we don't, then we're gonna waste our time. If you turn me to Galatians chapter 4, I want to notice with you something, because there, if you look at that word time in the Bible, there's two different uses of that word in the New Testament, at least. And one of them is, now I don't like going to the Greek very much. I think you can waste a lot of time doing that. But there's two words of time that's used in the Bible. One is chronos and the other one is kairos. Chronos is just the daily events, daily moments in time that don't amount to a whole lot. The other one is watershed moments, important moments in your life. So we have that in our life experience. We have just daily routine tasks, times, and moments don't amount to much, not memorable. And then you have these important moments in your life. Maybe the day you got married. Maybe the day you were baptized. Or these important moments, you understand. That's the two uses of this word time. Here in Galatians chapter 4, He says in verse 1, "Now I say that the heir, as long as he is a child, differeth nothing from a servant, though he be Lord of all, but is under tutors and governors until the time appointed of the father. Even so we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. But when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. And because ye are sons, God has sent forth the spirit of his son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father." Now, in these verses that we read to you, I'll say that sometimes we don't know the time. Romans 13:11 says, "And that knowing the time," sometimes we don't know the time. But the Lord always does. His timing's always the best. God always knows when things are the right time or the time for something to happen. Notice what it says here in the fourth verse. "When the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law." Notice he wasn't too early. He wasn't too late. Now, we've been around those people. Those people who are too late, they're not on time for anything. And we have those people who are always early. Now, I'm going to say those people, there's a lot fewer of those these days than the ones who are late. But I can name some names of people who are early. You know, it all depends, I guess, on how excited you are. I remember one time, I don't remember exactly what was happening. Jenny's parents are one of those that are always early. They are going to be early, and they know that we don't get ready until the time that's appointed. And sometimes we'll see them with their headlights. They're sitting at the top of the hill of our driveway. They know they're early. They're not going to drive up. They're just going to sit up there and wait until the right time to come. Well, you know, I appreciate their consideration. That's nice. But, you know, there's just not many people like that out in the world. Most people, you're saying, "Oh, my goodness, when are we going to get here?" You know, we have preachers staying in our house, and I'm starting to realize which preachers, when I tell them what time we're going to leave, which ones I need to give an earlier time and which ones I could give a later time. And because we don't like running late, but, you know, this is the time we're leaving. This is when we're going to leave. But I just got to adjust that time accordingly. Well, I'm going to tell you, when it comes to the Lord is always on time. When the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his son into the world. He was not late and he wasn't early. Why did those wise men see his star up there in the sky? Because he was right on time. Now, you know, the Lord, if he'd have been late, the star would have came, but he wasn't there yet. But he came right on time. And he came for this particular reason. He came to redeem us from our sins, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. If we go into the book of John, there's a phrase that Jesus uses over and over again if you read the four gospel accounts. And that phrase is, "My time has not yet come. My hour has not yet come." He says that over and over again. In fact, if you turn me to John chapter 12, he at this point says that his hour has come. Let's see, John chapter 12, verse 27. He says, "Now," right now, "is my soul troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this cause came I unto this hour. Father, glorify thy name." Then came there a voice from heaven saying, "I have both glorified it and will glorify it again." Now consider this scene. Here Jesus is saying, well, the hour has come. The hour that he kept saying, "Mine hour has not yet come. My time has not yet come." Now he says the hour has come. He knew the time, you understand. He knew that this was the time when he would go to save his people from their sins. He knew the time. You know, I would say that we need to do a better job of knowing the time. I know I do. My timing is just not the best. I work on computers, and computers don't ever have a bad mood. Now, they sometimes run slow, but they don't need coffee, and they don't need to be woke up good. I just bully it from the time I get there until I just make it do whatever I want it to do, you understand? You can't do that with people. And so my timing is, I'm going to do it right now. I don't want to wait. But you cannot do that, because some things take time. It takes time to heal. You know, if someone has been harmed or hurt or something, it takes time to heal. It takes time to grow. Some things just take time to grow. You can't rush these processes as much as we would like to. You know, last Sunday, I don't know if y'all remember this or not, but I said something about if you get mad at someone, you need to wait a week until you respond. Well, that may not have helped any of y'all this past week, but it helped me. The very next day, something happened, and I got pretty put out with somebody. And Jenny said, "Well, you said to wait a week." I said, "I may have said that, but I need to respond now." But I didn't. I didn't respond. And you know, I am just now at a point where I'm ready to talk about it. And it's almost been a week. Now I the emotion's gone. I was over here, and then I was over here with my emotions. But now I can talk about it. It just took time. And understanding and knowing the time is so important for the child of God to realize that there are some things that need to wait. In fact, before we move on in this, 1 Corinthians chapter 4 has a verse that Paul tells the church at Corinth. He says this very quickly, verse 5, 1 Corinthians 4, verse 5. He says, "Therefore, judge nothing before the time, until the Lord come, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts, and then shall every man have praise of God." Now consider this verse. He says, judge nothing before the time. Now, you know, there's a lot of folks in Christianity who believe that we're not supposed to judge anybody. Don't judge. You're not supposed to judge. Oh, dear friends, we are supposed to judge. We're just not supposed to judge. They'll quote Matthew 7:1, "Judge not that you be not judged." Well, keep reading. Keep reading. That means don't judge hypocritically. Don't judge someone's doing this wrong when you're doing it yourself. Don't judge that way. Jesus even says, "Judge not according to appearance, judge righteous judgment." And I think I've already mentioned this here before, but it's worth saying again. My dad would tell me and my brother, "You've lost your good judgment." And that meant we needed to have better judgment. We needed to judge better, you understand. But this text says, judge nothing before the time. There's timing involved. He says, until the Lord come. Now, we know the Lord's coming back again, second coming. It's in talking about that. The Lord comes on the scene. And when the Lord comes on the scene, He can bring to light the things that no one knew about, that no one heard, to bring to light the hidden things of darkness and make manifest the counsel of the hearts. You know, that's something that you can keep hidden from a lot of people. The counsel, what you're feeling inside. But the Lord can reveal that at His own proper time. And then shall every man have praise of God. You know, if you judge in the right time, in the right way, in the right spirit, the Lord is the one who blesses that effort. But I'd like to get back to John. And notice that Jesus said his soul is troubled. Why is his soul troubled? Well, something was about to take place where he was going to endure the wrath of his Father, who had never done that before. You know, this is a perfect, sinless Son of God, Holy Son of God, about to endure something He had never endured before. And He says in verse 27 of John 12, "Shall I pray for the Father to deliver me from this hour?" He says, that's why I'm here. I'm here for this, so I'll pray. Father, glorify Thy name. And so, Jesus is our example. About to go into something very difficult. In fact, none of us have ever experienced anything as difficult as what He is about to experience. And He's going to endure this. And what does He do? What does He do? Go to John 13, verse 1. "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that His hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. Notice Jesus is about to leave. He knows his hour has come. And what does he do? He enters into the communion service. He washes his disciples' feet. His priority, and when this hour has come, is to love his dear people. Go to John 17, verse 1. And Jesus says this in the 17th chapter of John, verse 1. These words spake Jesus and lifted up his eyes to heaven. Father, the hour has come. Glorify thy Son, that thy Son may glorify thee. What does Jesus do when his hour has come? He prays. He prays. You know, prayer is so important to the child of God. There's a song in our songbook that says prayer can change the night to day. All prayer makes all the difference in the world. Here, he's loving his disciples. He's communing with his disciples. He's praying to the Father. This is what he does when the hour has come, when the time has come. But we think about our life and our situation as we get back to Romans 13. What should we do? We need to know the time. Well, what does that mean? How do we know the time? What is that expression referring to? And how can we know the time? Well, let's look at what he's talking about here in Romans 13, verse 11. He says, and that knowing the time, that now, here it is high time to awake out of sleep. He says it's time to wake up. Wake up out of sleep. Now, I understand that everyone has a different time that they wake out of sleep. You know, my time I get up now is not what it used to be. I remember, I don't know what it is about leaving high school and going to college. You just get real sleepy. I was just always sleepy. And, you know, Jenny had a curfew. She had to be home by midnight. And so 11:47, she'd leave and she'd get there right at 12. And then she's calling the house at 9 the next morning. Well, I stayed up late. I need to sleep a little longer than that. 12 would be good. I'll get up at noon. What are you doing still in the bed? Well, you didn't leave till midnight. Well, I got to get some sleep. You know, well, now everyone, some people are morning people, some people are night people. But when is the right time to wake out of sleep? When are we supposed to get up? Well, from a spiritual point of view, we need to understand what sleep is really like. Turn me to Ephesians chapter 5 and notice what he says here in the 5th chapter of Ephesians. We're talking about waking out of sleep. I want you to know, I want you to consider someone who is asleep. What's the real difference visually between that sleeping person and a dead person? Well, I guess it depends on if they snore. You could hear them and you wouldn't hear the other one. But basically, they are laying there motionless. And here's what he says in Ephesians 5, verse 14. Wherefore he saith, awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. Now notice what he says here. Awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead. Now we say, well, is he telling someone to be resurrected? No. He's telling someone who has life, but is asleep, that he needs to get away from all the dead bodies that are around him. Now, you say, this is very strange language, but I want you to consider being on a battlefield. If you are on a battlefield and all kind of dead bodies around you, but you're alive, you may be injured, but you're alive. Is there really any difference if you're laying there like the rest of them in what you're accomplishing? You're not accomplishing anything. You're just laying there. And so if we, as God's people, are just blending in like everybody else. Like everybody else, the prince, the power of the air and this world, the Satan's influence, and we're just in there with everyone else, and no one can tell any difference between us and everyone else, then we've fallen asleep as God's people. We're asleep. We're not doing what the Lord has called us to do. And so this is the command. Awake, thou that sleepest. Arise from the dead. Get away from all these dead bodies. Get away from the dead works. And Christ shall give thee light. It's a dark, cold, cruel situation, but Christ shall give thee light. Very quickly, verses 15 and 16. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Now hold on to that expression as we come back to Romans 13. And notice the similarity in the language. Romans 13, 11. And that knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Now he's telling us exactly what we should do. He says the night is far spent, the day is at hand. That's when it's time to get up. It's time to get up when the day is at hand. Otherwise, you miss the whole day if you're asleep. And that's the sad thing about falling asleep, is what you miss when you go to sleep. What do you miss? You say, are you talking about while you're preaching, Brother James, that's falling asleep? Well, you can apply that way if you want. But what I'm really after is the things that are so marvelous that you don't see because you're asleep. For example, if we talk about the Mount of Transfiguration sometimes, and there's a part of that story that we may miss if we don't read it carefully. The disciples just about missed it. They were asleep. They were fast asleep when Jesus was there speaking to Moses and Elijah there on the mount. But they woke up long enough to see that and to see how white and bright the Savior had become. But they missed most of it because they were asleep. What were they talking about? I don't think that they heard a whole lot because they were asleep. Well, there also came a time, as we were reading in John 17, shortly after that, they went to Gethsemane. And Jesus was praying, and according to Luke chapter 22, his sweat was as great drops of blood. He was in agony. His soul was exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. But an angel came from God and strengthened him. Strengthened him. But the disciples didn't see it because they were asleep. They missed the whole thing because they were asleep. What are we missing out on? Because we're asleep. Spiritually asleep. Just going through the motions, as it were, and missing all the wondrous ways that God and the things that He's done for us. You know, it's such a blessing to go through the time we did last week, where you can take time and count your blessings and just inventory all the things that God has done for you and thank God for that and be thankful for all the things that He has done for us. But you know, if we're asleep, we just take these things for granted. And we don't even thank the one who has sent these blessings our way. And so he tells us it is high time to awake out of sleep. Now, you know, I use an alarm clock to make sure I don't sleep in. But, you know, sometimes I rely on other people to wake me up. You know, I told you I was out in Colorado elk hunting. I asked them, I said, well, what time do we have to get up in the morning? They said 3:30. I said, 3:30? Why in the world we'd get up that early? That is way too early. And they said, well, we're going to leave at 5. I said, that's an hour and a half. What are we going to do for an hour and a half before we leave? Well, we got to drink coffee and we got to get. I said, I ain't drinking no coffee. I'll get some extra sleep. And so I just waited on them to make enough noise that I woke up and we got ready. We left. But I relied on them to wake me up. I didn't even set an alarm clock. Well, you and I could certainly help God's people. Waking them up. Waking them up. Well, if they're asleep at the wheel, if they're asleep through life, let's wake them up, if I may say it that way. And how do we do that? Well, this 12th verse says, let us cast off the works of darkness. I believe this is like arising from the dead, as he says in Ephesians 5. Cast off the works of darkness, the ways this world talks and acts and the things that they do. Let's cast that off and put on the armor of light. Now, I love that expression, the armor of light, because if you go to Ephesians 6, he talks about the whole armor of God, and we could go through every bit of the whole armor of God. But one thing Ephesians 6 didn't say that this does is that's armor of light. Now, if you have clothes that light up, then that will give you a visual of this armor of light, if I may think of it that way. You know, when we were in Colorado, there you have these things on your hat that have lights and they shine and you could see where you're going. And we went to Disney World. Jenny had this sweater that had these lights that shine. You can dress a lot of ways in Disney World and get away with it. You can't do over here. You can look, because everyone looks that way over there. Well, if you're putting on the armor of light, then you're definitely going to stand out in the midst of a dark world. All this armor, the whole armor of God, it lights the way. It shines in such a way when you have on the whole armor of God. In fact, turn me to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. And notice what he says here in the 5th chapter of 1 Thessalonians. He tells us in it says, I'll just start in verse 1. But of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say, peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But ye, brethren, are not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief. Now let's consider for a moment. We talk about we don't know when the Lord's coming back again. He's coming as a thief in the night. We just read that. But he said, that day shouldn't overtake you like a thief. Why? Because the Lord told us what's going to happen before he comes back again. You know, if you ever sit and watch the sunrise, that sky gets awfully bright and light before you ever see the sun. And the child of God who is not asleep, but actually awake, you know, that deer hunting kind of helps me because I usually don't see the sun rise until I go out deer hunting. Well, that's a lot of beautiful sunrises I'm missing because I'm in the bed asleep. Well, what if the child of God goes to sleep? He's going to miss the signs. He's going to miss the bright shining that the Lord sends showing that he's coming. You know, we were talking about last Sunday how we didn't believe that there is a set predestinated time that you are going to die. But there is a season of 70 to 80 years where your life expectancy is. It's just like a woman that is with child. They'll give you a due date. The child's due on this particular date. We had 3 children and none of them hit their date. It's just a guess. But that guess is based on 9 months. That's the season, you understand. And that we can reasonably expect. Well, you and I, we can see the signs so that the Lord coming back again, that day won't overtake us as a thief of the night. Verse 5, ye are all the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, verse 6, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. For they that sleep in the night, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet, the hope of salvation. Notice how similar this language is. He's telling us not to sleep. He's telling us that we are of the day, we are of the light. He tells us to put on the armor. Look at the similarities. If we as God's people would understand and know the time. Know the time. And know that the days are evil. Then we can redeem the time. What about that phrase, redeem the time? You know, I remember I was at a conference one time and the man who was introducing the conference said he knew that there is no amount of wealth or power that any of us could acquire. He says, but time, you can never get that back, and we'll be mindful of your time. And I always remembered that because he says, you can get more money, you can get more power, you can get this, you can get that, but you can't get more time. And so therefore, the Bible tells us to redeem the time. Well, how can you buy back time? Well, when I think of that phrase, I think of Brother Roger Lewis. So some of you knew him and loved him. I think this is the way I understand the story. He spent 25 years out in the world, and he felt bad about that. And he dedicated the rest of his time to the Lord and his service to try to redeem back, buy back that time that he had lost. He was here every Wednesday night for prayer service. Any church meeting going on, he was there. I saw him in Texas. I saw him in all kind of different states, other places. He was all over the place going to church, redeeming the time. We waste so much time. There's so much time that we have, and we just waste the time. You know, what is your definition of wasting time? Well, you know, if you ever miss a church service, you've wasted time. There's time that you could have spent with your Lord, with Lord's people, and you wasted that time. You didn't use it the way the Lord would have you to use it. If you ever had a time where you're bored, have nothing to do, but yet you have the Word of God sitting there and you're not reading it, you're wasting time. We could go on and on about all the ways that we waste time, but he tells us that we are children of light. Let us not sleep as do others. You know, other people may be doing it, doesn't mean we should. We are of the day. Be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet, the hope of salvation. We're given the present time. How will we use it? That is the question. But you know, Jesus didn't waste any of his time. You know, there's a song in our songbook, "From the manger to the cross, not a moment's time was lost. He prayed." Praying is not a waste of time. Jesus didn't waste any time. He went about doing good, healing all that were oppressed of the devil. He used the time that he had on this earth in the best way that it could ever possibly have been used. And therefore, he is our example of how we should go about ministering to God's people, doing good, doing the things God has called us to, and to awake if we are asleep. Because one day, the Lord's coming back again. And all the wrongs that we experience in this life, they'll all be made right. They'll all be changed in a moment, a twinkling of an eye. Knowing these things that the Lord has given to us, these things that He has provided for us, the things that He has purchased for us, we also can keep from wasting that time. And, you know, we've mentioned a lot of that last Sunday. But the Lord coming back again and the victory that we have in Jesus ought to motivate the child of God to do everything that he can in the Lord's service. And may the Lord help us to use the time that he has given to us. I thank you for your good attention this morning.